The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Hello. Well, I am not Vina Jones Cox, but I'm Scott Ellsworth. Not as pretty as Vina. Some say I have a face for radio. That's a dad joke or something like that. Anyway, I am here with our special guest, Larissa Green. She's with the Vanna IRA. We are going to talk saving taxes using retirement accounts and some of the new modifications that were made with a lot of the tax laws that were passed in recent years. So I'm going to welcome, let me back up 1 second. So we're sponsored by RIA, and they have an event coming up it's not this Saturday, but it's the following Saturday, which would be the,
I think it's the 7th.
7th.
Is that right? Or no, 6th.
No, let me see. It's the...
No, 8th. Yeah, Saturday the 8th.
It's the second Saturday. It's the 8th.
We're radio people. We should know calendars.
Yeah. That is how and why to flip land instead of houses. So you really needed to go to that. It's 10 o'clock on Saturday. It is a Saturday, but weather might be not so great, and it's a great opportunity to learn about flipping land. So for this evening, again, Larissa Green is with me. Larissa, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me, Scott.
All right. So are you in a warm part of the country or a cold?
I'm in a warm part, yes. We're in the south here in Florida, so it's relatively been mild, and it's very nice today.
Well, it's getting nicer here, better than 2 degrees, so it feels balmy out. Anyway, hey, so what I want to do is talk first about let's talk about about IRAs. Sort of there's a number of retirement accounts that people can put money in, and a lot of the audience that we have, they do self-directed because they want to invest in non-traditional assets. So let's talk a little bit about the first one, which would be a traditional IRA. What are some of the laws that have been recently passed that people need to be aware of as they move forward into this traditional IRA space?
Mm-hmm. A traditional IRA, I think, is an account that most people are, or maybe people are more familiar with than other retirement accounts. And so you'll hear, you know, it's a tax-deferred account. It grows tax-deferred when you take distributions. Those are going to be taxed as ordinary income the year you take and the amount you take them. And a couple of the changes that they made, they're really beneficial to a lot of people with these accounts. So the first thing is just going to be that you can still make contributions even after what's called required minimum distribution age. So what that means is that when you reach a certain age, you do have to start taking distributions. So you've kind of been avoiding taxation, having it grow tax deferred all this time. And at some point, the IRS says, okay, well, you do have to take distributions and realize that income and pay taxes on it. And so it used to be that once you reach required minimum distribution age, you could no longer contribute even if you had earned income. And so this update actually might go all the way back to the first SECURE Act, but now as long as you have earned income, you still could potentially make contributions even if you do have to take out some required minimum distribution amount. So that's beneficial to those that are working, you know, past retirement age or maybe getting a job, you know, going back into the workforce after retirement. So you have that benefit of still continuing to save.
Super.
Another required minimum distribution update is actually the age at which you have to start taking required minimum distribution. So it actually has changed a little bit over time. It was 70 and a half at one point. They moved it to 72. And now if you are 72, if you turn 72 on or after January 1st of 2023, you didn't have to start taking them until age 73. So again, that just pushed back that age where you have to start taking those required minimum distributions. And actually, by the year 2033, it'll be age 75. So, you know, that kind of gives you that opportunity to continue to defer taxes and save for retirement if you didn't need the income in retirement. And one more required minimum distribution update that I want to talk about is actually the penalty for missing taking that distribution. So if you missed it in the past, unfortunately, it would have been 50% of the amount missed, and they changed it to 25% and even possibly as low as 10% if you correct the error in a timely manner, which is within 2 years, according to the IRS.
It's a lot better than what it was. That penalty was stiff if you missed those RMDs.
Yeah, and I think what I was reading was they just felt that, of course, a lot of times people miss it in error. You know, they just didn't realize they had to take it or, you know, how to calculate it. And so I think that's why they kind of moved that and changed that amount. And then just this information is just for anybody that might have to take a required minimum distribution. Just know that you have until April 1st the following year to take your first required minimum distribution. So you have until April 1st to take the, what they call, they kind of shorten it and call it an RMD, the year following the year you turn 73. But then all others have to be taken within that tax year by December 31st.
That is important information for those people to do that. So what about a Roth? How does a Roth, what are some of the changes for Roth? Are there any? And what would be the benefit for those that aren't familiar? Some people are familiar with an IRA, but they don't understand Roth. So why don't you talk a little bit about why a Roth IRA is potentially superior to traditional?
Mm-hmm. So a Roth IRA is an interesting account because although you don't get deductions for making your contributions, it has the potential to grow tax-free so that once you reach retirement – and you take distributions, you take those distributions tax-free. And I say potential because two things have to be true in order for those distributions to be completely tax-free. One, you have to reach age 59 and a half, and they use that as retirement age, so the IRS says that's retirement age. And it has to age or has to have existed with contributions for a minimum of 5 years. So those two things have to be true. And if those two things are true, then you can take distributions completely tax-free. And it is a great account, but, you know, I always tell people it just depends on what your goals are. You know, the type of account that works best for you is definitely something to talk to your tax professional about. But these, you know, all the accounts we're going to talk about have their benefits. And, of course, you can see where having tax-free distributions at retirement can be a very big benefit. They haven't necessarily had a lot of updates, but something that really stands out for the Roth IRA is that unused 529 plan funds can actually be rolled to a Roth IRA for the benefit of the owner of the 529 plan. So the beneficiary of the 529 plan can roll over unused plan funds to a Roth IRA. Now, there are some catches, of course, here. The plan has to at least be aged for 15 years. The rolled over funds have to have been in the plan for a minimum of 5 years, and that includes earnings. And then the rollovers are going to be subject to annual contribution limits for Roth IRAs. So, for example, this year it's going to be $7,000. So you could potentially roll over $7,000 into a Roth IRA for the benefit of the original beneficiary of the 529 plan. So there are some rules, but you can see where this could be a big benefit to those that haven't used 100% of their 529 plan funds.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to take a break, but if you have a question, call 877-772-9658. We'll be back in a second. All right. We are back. Again, if you have a question, feel free to call the studio, 877-772-9658. Larissa, I was just Maybe it's not directly related to IRAs, but I think this idea that you can use those unused 529 plan funds and roll those into a Roth is awesome, because I can't tell you how many clients I'd have. The kid gets done with college, whatever it would be, and there's money left. They don't choose to go to another beneficiary, and they're just going to go ahead and take it out. Well, now they've got to pay tax on those earnings, and now they can roll that amount in, limited to what you said, $7,000 a year maximum. So for 5 years, you can do it. Convert over $35,000, you got an extra $35,000 in a Roth. That is just, that's just golden. It's worth the price of admission. So that's great.
Yeah, it is. It is really a big benefit for the Roth IRA. So, like I said, there wasn't a ton of updates specifically to the Roth, but I think that one is definitely worth noting.
So there are a couple other kinds of IRA accounts. I'm not a big fan of one particular anymore, but there's the SEP IRA, which again is not one I'm real big fan of. Tell me a little bit about a SEP IRA for those that don't know about those.
Mm-hmm. A SEP IRA is an account that there's a few retirement accounts that are geared towards businesses, and there are two specifically that are IRA accounts. That's SEP, and we'll also talk about Simple. And so these accounts, because they're IRAs, they're sometimes a little easier to administer than versus, you know, a larger employer plan of some kind. And they do allow you to make contributions, potentially get deductions for your business depending. And the SEP IRA, it does have a larger contribution limit similar to a 401k, but the formula for figuring out what you can actually contribute is a little bit different. But it does have benefits. And, you know, especially if you are a small business owner and you're looking for a plan for your business, something like a SEP IRA or a Simple IRA, those can definitely be benefits to you. So, again, you get those larger contribution limits. For this year, it's up to $70,000, so that's the 2025 contribution limit, up to $70,000. It is based on a formula of income, but you can still have a Roth or a traditional IRA alongside many of these employer plans, so you can really get the business benefit and the individual benefit as well.
Yeah, that's important. So, and with the SEP IRAs, it used to be that you could not do traditional, and now you, I mean, I'm sorry, not do Roth, but now you can.
That's right.
Good.
Yep, that was one of the updates with the Secure Act 2.0, is that now you can make your employer contributions as Roth contributions. So that was a really big change. And even though, you know, the Secure Act was really passed back in 2022, you're hearing about it more because people are able to implement those changes. So now you're seeing administrators and custodians having clarified with IRS information how they can help their clients make those contributions. So now you're actually seeing that stuff put into action. So you'll be hearing about it more, I feel like, because of that. So, yes, it was, you know, part of the Secure Act in 2022. We had to wait for some clarifications, but now you're seeing that being implemented, and you can make those employer contributions as Roth if you choose to do that.
And the on the SEP IRA side, you made it clear it is you've got to have a business. So a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA, we can go ahead and contribute as long as we have earned income somewhere on that tax return that exceeds the amount you're going to put in. But for a SEP IRA, or the next one we'll talk about is a Simple, you have to have a business. So, but the SEP, so I do like the fact that, you know, you could put in that $70,000 contingent upon a formula, but you could really would do that. So I think it's a good plan. What do you see with Simple IRAs? Why don't you explain that for the audience? What are a Simple IRA, and what are some of those updates for that product?
Mm-hmm. So a Simple IRA, again, is a plan. It acts more like an IRA, so it's especially kind of geared towards small business owners. You can potentially get deductions for making contributions for yourself and for your business. So different than the SEP IRA, which is employer-only contributions, the Simple IRA gets both employee and employer contributions. There are larger contribution limits for simple IRAs versus individual IRAs. So different than the traditional IRA and the Roth IRA, which are $7,000 or $8,000 if you're over the age of 50 this year, you're going to have larger contributions for the simple IRA. There are specific plan establishment rules, so I'd like to mention this because we'll talk a little bit about the deadlines for contributions as well. And very specifically for simple IRAs, they did have to be established by October 1st of 2024 to make 2024 contributions. Now, if your simple plan was already in place, then you have a little bit more time to make specific contributions potentially. But for those that did not have the plan in place, it did have to be in place by October 1st of 24 to make those contributions. But the good news is you can still set up the plan, establish it for 2025 and make contributions. And now starting in 2025, they have changed the way the catch-up contributions work, which, you know, they're giving an allowance for individuals of certain ages. And so the catch-up contribution for those 50 to 59 and 64 plus for 2025 is $3,500. So again, very specific, 50 to 59 and 64 plus, it's $3,500. And again, starting in 2025, the contribution limit for those age 60 to 63 is $5,250. So they're giving you a super contribution, if you will, if you're age 60 to 63. And now again, with the Secure Act 2.0, your contributions can be deemed as Roth. So they're giving you that after-tax awesome. Growth in the simple IRA, which is brand new.
That is awesome. So one of the things that I like about Roth, and the fact they made this simple, the nice thing about the simple, and even the SEP, so I shouldn't be so down on it before. I mean, the nice thing about the simple is that if you're not going to make, if your goal is not to make $70,000 contribution, some of these other plans can be much simpler, right? I.e. a simple IRA. So it does give some opportunity for somebody to get a retirement plan when they know they're not gonna make large contributions. Typically when I have a client who will say to me, "Hey, I want to set up a retirement account," one of the first questions I ask is, "Well, how much do you think you want to contribute?" Because that really determines which plan you have to go to. If you want to contribute $70,000, then you have to look at those plans that allow a larger amount. But you can go much simpler if you're only going to do a small amount. Now, there are benefits, which we'll talk about later, between having an IRA account, which is the three we've talked about so far, and, well, actually four of them with simple, and a 401k. There's some differences in as you invest in non-traditional assets and what that's going to mean if you make mistakes and the ability to contribute. And we'll talk about timelines. So, all right, the one thing I did want to do is if you want to call in, again, 877-772-9658, and then also you can email VinaRadio@gmail.com, and we can do that. We do have one question. I think it'll be a fairly easy answer before our next break. So the caller asks, is it allowed for a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k account holder to designate a non-disqualified person as a beneficiary upon the account holder's death, and does that designation affect distribution timing and or time to completely withdraw funds from the plan, assuming that the beneficiary survives the term, or can the initial beneficiary designate a successor? How does that affect timing? There's a lot, in that question. But the first one, are you allowed to, in a Roth IRA and Roth 401k, designate a non-disqualified person as a beneficiary?
So in most cases, you can designate really whomever you would like as a beneficiary. In many states, you may, if you are married, you may have to have spousal consent if you're not naming them 100% primary beneficiary. So you just, that's going to vary state by state. But technically, the answer is you can really name whoever you'd like.
Right. Except you're right. You have to have spousal consent a lot of times, you know. I guess the government doesn't want somebody to designate their girlfriend instead of their wife getting the money when they die, right? So I think they that's the only thing I can figure why they put that in there. So, and there's
no
obviously
surprises.
Legal issues
yeah.
with the couple. So, right. Now the other thing that the first person asked is about designating beneficiaries after that initial person passes. And so why don't we talk about the sort of the rules? You don't have to go into real detail, but what are the rules as far as the main beneficiary of the IRA account dies, and now it's an inherited IRA? So how fast they have to withdraw that? What are the restrictions? Because she wants to know, hey, if I'm that heir, can I go ahead and put another beneficiary on that? So when I die.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So if it's, of course, just backing up a little bit, if it's a spousal beneficiary, they can treat the account as their own, and they can, you know, take withdrawals as they normally would for their own lifetime. If it's a non-spousal beneficiary, there are some factors that come in here. So in general, I'm just going to talk in general terms here. You can name a non-spousal beneficiary, and they're typically going to have 10 years to distribute the account. There was some clarification recently, and I believe although they didn't initially qualify that there should be required minimum distributions on those accounts, I think they did clarify, and Scott, you may have heard this as well, that they do need to take required minimum distributions, but they have 10 years to empty the account, so to speak. But that doesn't mean that you can't name. So if somebody inherits the account, even if they have 10 years to disperse it, they can name beneficiaries on that account, absolutely.
Right, but that person would not be an inherited IRA for them. Would they have to distribute when the next beneficiary stepped up?
You know what, that rule I'm not as familiar with. I might have to do some research on that one.
Okay, well, that's good. All right, hey, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, again, if you have a question, 877-772-9658 or vinaradio@gmail.com. All right, welcome back. This is Scott Ellsworth. Just want to make a reminder on 2-8, Saturday the 8th of February, how and why to flip land instead of houses. That'll be at 10 a.m. on a Saturday. You can go to register at CincinnatiRIA.com. Again, questions, give us a call, 877-772-9658 or VinaRadio@gmail.com. So I'm here with Larissa Green. She's with Advana IRA. And now we're going to talk about the one that I just love, and that is solo 401ks. So why don't you give us a little bit of background on solo 401ks and tell us what some of those changes are with the past SECURE Acts that come up.
Okay. So a solo 401k, and I think sometimes people get intimidated by when they hear 401k, they think, well, I must not be eligible for that. I don't have a large company. I don't have a ton of employees, but very specifically, a solo 401k is for small business owners with no employees. So who can have a solo 401k? That's a small business owner, their partners, and their spouses. So if you have, you know, a small business and you have a partner in that business, any equitable partners and spouses for that business can have a solo 401k. If you have employees, you cannot have a solo 401k, and sometimes people say, well, it's just my children that are my employees, and unfortunately, they do not give allowances for that. So unless your children have equitable, you know, ownership in the business, then you wouldn't be eligible for the solo 401k. But it is a great account for independent business owners who are looking to save for retirement, because really they have to do it for themselves, right? They're not a part, you know, of a W-2 job where they have an employer making those contributions. And the solo 401k really truly allows for that. Each plan might allow something a little different, so please keep that in mind. You do want to, when you're looking for a solo 401k, look at what the plan options allow. So things like loans to participants, many plans will allow that, but it is plan specific. So if you want to be able to borrow, take a personal loan from the plan, you want to make sure that the plan you're signing up for does allow it. It used to be that you wanted to look for something that allowed Roth contributions if you wanted to make Roth contributions, but you'll see with the Secure Act 2.0 that some of that stuff was changed. But these plans also can allow after-tax contributions that are different from employee and employer contributions. And again, it's going to be plan-specific, but they allow you to really maximize your contribution if you're looking to do that. And I think, Scott, you did mention, too, you know, when you're looking at a plan, if you're really looking to max it out, or if you're not looking to max it out, one plan or the other might be right for you. So for this year, for the solo 401k, you can contribute up to that same $70,000 as a SEP IRA. So just to compare the two, the SEP IRA is up to 25% of your compensation, or $70,000, the lesser of the two. The 401k contribution limit is also $70,000, but that formula is going to be different. You have employee and employer contributions. You also, in some plan cases, have an extra contribution called a non-Roth after-tax contribution. And you also have catch-up contributions in the solo 401k different than the SEP IRA. So again, all of these plans are great. It's really just going to depend on your goals and what you're looking for in a plan.
So what are the catch-up contribution amounts in the 401k?
So catch-up contribution did change a little bit with Secure Act 2.0, and now you sort of have that super contribution allowance as well. So for 2025, if you're age 50 to 59 or 64 or older, you can put in $7,500. If you're age 60 to 63, you can put in $11,250, and that's brand new in 2025. So $11,250 for those 60 to 63. 50 to 59 and 64 plus is going to be $7,500. And then actually, starting in 2026, for those earning more than $145,000 or more, will make those catch-up contributions as Roth. So that's just something to note. Starting in 2026, that's going to be a part of how you make your contribution. So they did make that change, and your allowance for that changes your total annual contribution amount. So if you're in that 50 to 59 or 64 plus, your total contribution amount can be up to $77,500 for 2025, or if you're in the age range of 60 to 63, you can put in $81,250. So you can see those drastic differences there.
And what I will say is, you're right. So the idea of an after-tax contribution that lets you max it out, a lot of them, some may have heard of it called a mega Roth. So the one benefit of that is the, and you correct me if I'm wrong at all, Larissa, but with a 401k, you've got the employee contributions, right? The deferrals, and we can do basically, is it 23,000, right? 23?
It's 23 for 24, and it's 23,500 for 25.
So that, there you go. So we contribute that. And then the employer portion would be some percentage up to 25%, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you can see, if I only made, let's say I just made $100,000. If I can contribute 23.5, okay, so let's just call it 24. If I can contribute 24% and basically of that 100, and my employer can contribute 25%, that still is only going to get me just less than $50,000. And Larissa, you said my max was $70,000 if I'm not an old man. And if I'm an old man, I'm not really old, but I can contribute that extra $7,750. And for some reason, there's 4 years where I can really, really, really pump it up with that $11,250. But that's the limit. So how am I, so the issues always come up with folks is, how do they get to that $70,000 when essentially I only make $100, but I want to contribute my max, $70,000. And this is a prime way to do it, because now you can contribute that just under 50 between the employer and the employee piece, and the other, let's say, I'm just rounding numbers, but let's say 20,000, I can write a check, deem it as an after-tax contribution in my 401k, I still have to have the income. I still have to have 100k, or essentially, you probably have to have a little more than 70k because you got stuff you got to deal with. But about that amount, I've at least got to have the income still. So my business can't, if I'm a sole proprietor, single member LLC, not an S corp, it's only based on profit. If I don't make $70,000, I'm not going to be able to contribute it. But if I do, I can actually contribute $70,000 plus those catch-ups. That is just enormous to be able to sock that money away.
It is. And, you know, that sort of name everyone gives it, that mega Roth, it's really interesting because that third type of contribution, it is an employee contribution, and it's considered non-Roth after tax. So just, you know, if you break that down for a second, you think, well, why is it non-Roth? So you do have to take an extra step to convert it over to the Roth bucket, as I like to say, of your 401k, but now it can grow tax-free. So initially it's going to go in after tax, but grow tax-deferred, and then you take that extra step to show it's converted to Roth, and now it will grow tax-free. So essentially, you can have your 401k grow completely tax-free if you're making all those contributions Roth. So that's why they kind of call it the mega Roth 401k. And it's a really great way to save for retirement. It might not make sense for everybody, but also when you're looking at a plan, if you're looking to make those larger contributions, you just want to make sure your plan does allow the non-Roth after-tax contribution.
Right. And that extra step you pointed out, is it's important to do that right away. Because if you have that $20,000 in my example that goes in and you invest in a non-traditional asset and it now is worth 30, if you convert it after you've made that money, you're going to have to pay tax on the 10 profit, not on the 20. That'll still come over without any tax implications because it was contributed after tax. But if I'm right, Larissa, that $10,000, if I wait, I'm lazy and I don't do it. Now all of a sudden I'm paying tax on that rollover. It's almost like a traditional to Roth conversion.
That's right. So it's important to take those steps with your tax professional and have them help you with it because it is a 1099. So that, you know, it's going to show as taxable ordinary income to do the conversion. And so you definitely want to work with them because obviously a portion of that, if not all of it, is going to be have been contributed after tax. So it's important to do that with a tax professional.
All right. So we're going to take a break. So if you have a question, call 877-772-9658 or vinaradio@gmail.com. We'll be back in a minute. And we are back. I want to do something right now. And actually, Robert, I'll give you a shout out. Thank you for reminding me. I was remiss. I got so excited about talking about this subject. But Larissa, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and Advana IRA, and just give us some information about you and the company.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So I work for Advana IRA. We're a self-directed IRA administrator, so we don't sell anything at all. We just hold the account so that our account holders can find and make the investments that they want outside of the market. And I have actually been with Advana almost 13 years, so I've been doing this a little while. And I really started kind of doing back office work, and then I started doing marketing, education, and sales probably about 11 years ago. So that's kind of a little bit about me. I also do self-direct my IRA, so I'm out there doing a lot of networking, and I have learned so much in my time at Advanta, and it really encouraged me and got me started doing my own stuff.
All right. That's awesome. Well, we appreciate you being here, and you're a good, great expert to have on the call. So we have a question from Alan. For tax-free distribution, does a deposit have to be over X number of years? So for instance, and he gives an example. In 2010, I did an IRA to Roth conversion, right? Paid the taxes and have since grown the Roth by 8 times. So it is true that all distributions from that point forward, from the time you rolled it over and gained, it is going to be tax-free, totally. But I do want to ask, so I've had another person ask this before, is let's say I roll my IRA and it becomes a Roth, And so with Roth, you can take out your basis in those Roths. But if I roll over from a traditional to a Roth, I've paid tax on it. Those amounts, that basis, when can I deduct that? What are the limits if I'm not at retirement age?
So there's a couple of questions in there. First, just pointing out the basis meaning contributions. So if you open a Roth IRA and you're making contributions different than other retirement accounts, you can actually take your contributions out at any time, tax and penalty free. One, because they've gone in after tax. And two, it's just a benefit of the account. So if you contributed over the last, say, 10 years, and you have $50,000 in contributions in that account, and for some reason you need to take a distribution, you can take a distribution up to the amount you've contributed, tax and penalty free. The second part of that question was about doing a traditional IRA to Roth IRA conversion. Remember I mentioned that the account has to age for 5 years and you have to reach age 59 and a half for it to be completely tax-free. The exception to that is when you do Roth conversion. So you're moving from a pre-tax account to an after-tax account. Each year that you do a Roth conversion, that Roth conversion has to age for its own 5 years. So it has to be in the account and age for 5 years in order to be tax-free. So if you have a traditional IRA and you're converting it over time to kind of ease the burden of the tax taxation that you're going to receive from those 1099s from the Roth conversion, then every year that you do a conversion, it's going to have its own five-year aging. The good news is that when you take distributions, those distributions are automatically assumed to come from the buckets in order, first with contributions made directly to the Roth, then it would be Roth conversions, and then last it would be earnings. So hopefully you reach age 59 and a half and all of your money has aged for that minimum of 5 years that it needed to age for before you start taking distributions.
But it is something you really have to be careful about, because I've had people who say, I'm going to convert this IRA traditional to a Roth, I'll pay the tax. But when you really dig deeper, they may have to take it out. They may need to access it in 2 or 3 years, and that isn't going to work. So they don't want to do that. And even if they're beyond retirement age, let's say they reach retirement age and they do that conversion, same thing. It still has to age for the 5 years.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So those are big. I mean, that's going to have a big effect. So I'm going to have another question is, can you touch on Rob's rollover startup fund contributions? Do you know much about Rob's rollovers?
So we really just work on the 401k plan side when it comes to Rob's. And so I usually would defer to a professional that can really help individuals not only establish, the Rob's structure, but also advise them on it.
Okay, yes. And I just actually did a short webinar on those, so I'll touch on it. I won't go into real depth, so you're not going to get a lot of depth here with this. But the idea of a Rob's rollover, it's a Rob's, which is a rollover business startup, is the idea that your 401k can start a business and your 401k can own that business. The contributions don't come from you. They come from your 401k buys it. Think about this. If I put my retirement account and I'm at P&G and I put my money in my retirement account, I can actually buy P&G stock inside that P&G retirement account. So it's the same type of thing where you have a company. So I want to say I want to flip properties. I can set up a company, C Corporation. I'm going to go through this real quick and make sure you got to talk to somebody before you do anything with this. But I set that up. I then fund with my 401k. Either I have my 401k that currently already has funds in it, or I bring over, let's say I retired from P&G, I bring over $500,000 into my self-directed solo 401k. Now I can take $50,000 or $100,000 or $200,000 or whatever I need in that company, and I can actually, after I've set the company up, I've then made sure my 401k that is now going to be a part of that entity. So if you think about it, It's almost like it's really for new business. So let's say I start a new business. I'm going to actually have the 401k. I'm going to establish a 401k with that business. At that point, I will purchase the stock of the C Corp. And so now my 401k owns the C Corp. Now, they'll typically own 99 or 98%. You'll own 1 or 2%. Lots of reasons for that, but it does allow you to sign notes and things like that. So it's a good thing. You don't give yourself a lot of it, but you do some of it, very little. And then at that point, now that Rob's is funded, your 401k at that point can't fund it more. It's only a one-time shot that they've got to do that. So I think that's the, you know, you've got to sort of look at it. So if I'm flipping properties, and I can have loans, by the way, in my Rob's, my rollover startup, my Rob's corporation, I can have loans, and I can personally guarantee them. And that would be a prohibited transaction, personally guaranteeing loans for your 401k, your IRA. So that entity, and lots of other things go into this, so don't, this is, you got to take this for, this is an overview. But I can do that, but I want to decide how much I want to put in there. It needs to be substantial. Don't go transferring $1,000 in there, but it might be 50,000. I like that sort of as a minimum. But some businesses may not need it, but again, I think 50 is a good number. And then you might have it where I'm flipping houses, and even though I can get loans, I may need $500,000 to be able to flip the number of houses I want to flip. So that's good. The other thing is with a Rob's, so again, the contributions come from your 401k one time. And then, but after that, family could even invest in that Rob's entity. So, and the other thing is you can actually actively work in that business, which you can't normally work in the business owned by your 401k. So that's an important side of it. So before we get off, we're about to be finished for tonight. But Larissa, anything that you want to just touch on before we? And oh, I know deadlines. How about some deadlines? When can I set up? When do I have to set up the different plans? It's already, you know, January 28th or 29th, I guess. What are my deadlines for setting these things up?
Mm-hmm. So that's a great question. You have traditional and Roth IRAs, as well as health savings accounts and education savings accounts that can still be set up and contributed to for 2024 all the way up until April 15th of this year. So you still have a couple of months. There are some stipulations. So your HSA or health savings account is tied directly to the healthcare plan you have, and that plan had to have been established by December 1st of 2024 in order to qualify for those contributions. But outside of that, in most cases, you can still set up and fund those accounts on or before April 15th. I mentioned the simple IRA has a specific one. It had to have been set up by October 1st of 24. Your SEP IRA, you have up until business filing plus extensions to file or to create and contribute for the previous year. And then new with Secure Act, you have the ability in some situations to still establish the solo 401k and make contributions up until tax filing plus extensions. So that is going to be specific to the structure of your business and how you pay yourself and how you file. But in some situations, you still have a little bit of time for those as well.
Larissa, I appreciate it so much you came. Thank you so much. Good information. What an expert to have. And wish you the best. And I'll talk to you in the future. And for now, I'm off the air and looking forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you.